Hi, I'm Dave O'Neill.
I'm Kitty Flanagan, and we're from the Sweet and Salty Roundabout, also known as
The Junkies. So please tune in. If you're listening to Ingridopedia with Ben and Emily, you'll probably like our show.
Yeah.
We do. We talk about lollies, chips, chocolate.
Yeah. They probably talk about better food than we do. They've a better got some, class of food.
They've got some great episodes here. I've just been having a bit of a listen. Very good. In fact, I'm going to steal some of the ideas. Anyway, whatever.
If you need a sugary break, switch over to The Junkies.
The Junkies, where you find all your podcasts.
Ben, what's your favourite flavour of Hubba Bubba?
Original?
Oh.
But should I say...
Not grape.
It's borderline. I guess this is a grape episode.
You have to say grape.
Grape.
It's legally mandated. You have to say grape.
Okay, it's grape. It's grape. Hi, you're listening to Ingridopedia, Australia's plumpest food podcast. My name's Ben Birchall, and I'm joined by Emily Naismith. Hello, Em.
Hello, Ben. Today's our grape episode.
It is.
Sweet, sour, delicious.
Peeled.
Juicy.
Not peeled.
Frozen.
Yeah, I never did the frozen grapes thing, but yeah, I've been reading up about them. You can roll them in jelly crystals.
I saw people going nuts for that. Mm. It's like grapes are sweet enough, though. I think it's an American thing.
I think it is an American thing.
Anyway, don't let dogs have them.
No. I didn't know how bad they were, and I've got a very small dog. Like one grape could do her in. And my daughter drops a lot of food on the ground. So no grapes in our household.
Good.
We'll fight about them instead.
Yes. It's a cost of living crisis, Ben. Times are tough.
They are.
Have you ever been tempted, or have you ever scanned something through the self-serve checkout as a cheaper item?
I have been tempted. I haven't done it. I know it's common. I'm not judging anyone who does it. I think, you know, now they've got the the camera on you.
Yeah, and they've got the colour thing, so you can't necessarily, if you put red capsicums down, all the red food comes up that it thinks it is.
I didn't know that.
So you can't scan a red capsicum through as a green capsicum as easily. Not that I have.
Does it pick up brown onions? I guess it's because everybody was putting everything through as onions,
Brazil
right?
Brazil nuts as brown onions. And
yeah,
stuff,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I want to talk about the moral dilemma of whether or not it's okay to eat a grape as you walk around the supermarket.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever done it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
Same. So technically, you haven't paid for it. So I guess, technically it is theft.
Yeah.
But here are the reasons why I think it's okay. In certain circumstances.
Right. Okay.
Number one, eating it out of the bag on the stand, theft.
Yeah.
Placing the bag in your trolley. Then taking the grape.
There's an intent to buy.
Exactly.
There's an intent to buy. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Your honour.
Number two, if you were to try and buy one singular grape, it wouldn't register on the scales. Therefore, it's free.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So when I worked at a supermarket, someone I served tried to buy a singular bird's eye chili and it didn't register on the scales. So I just chucked it in their bag for free.
Yeah.
Same thing applies to
Same
grapes.
Thing. Yep.
Number three, they literally give out free fruit like bananas and apples to kids.
To kids, yeah.
As you do the shopping.
Yeah.
And a grape is very much similar, even less expensive. So, yeah, you're not a kid, but it's basically allowed, I would say.
Basically. Okay, that is the weakest of the arguments so far.
But altogether, that's a strong argument for stealing grapes.
Yeah.
Some people also say that you can steal grapes to sample the quality.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, before you commit to a whole bag, just have a little taste, see if they're worth it. But I would say, I don't necessarily agree with that because you don't really do that with any other fruit or vegetable. But
maybe you should. Hey, maybe another argument is screw those big supermarkets.
That is another one. That's another one.
Unless they're advertising on this podcast, in which case we welcome your money.
I just think that there are some margins that it's okay to play in a supermarket. And supermarkets would expect you to eat a grape, just like how at Melbourne Central Coles during uni, if I forgot my cutlery, there was just a bag of 100 forks open.
Yeah.
Like a plastic Like, you're supposed to buy 100 forks in the picnic area.
Yeah.
No one needs 100 forks at Melbourne Central Coles. But it was just open. And so that was like an unwritten law that anyone who needs a fork can just take a fork.
You know that our name is on this podcast. They could come for you.
Oh, isn't there like a certain thing about like after 10 years?
Statute of limitations on stealing plastic cutlery. Yeah, maybe. I'll look it up.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, maybe I should change my name.
Interesting that you're talking about stealing. I want to talk a little bit about stealing as well, but of a much higher value. So, Em, how much would you pay for a bunch of grapes? This isn't one of those politician, how much does a loaf of bread cost? I actually don't know how much.
They're expensive.
They've gotten expensive, I know that.
I usually don't buy the whole bag because that's kind of insane.
Yeah.
I would, take a bunch out. I don't know. I'd probably pay, $10, I guess.
$10, yep. So not $910 for a single bunch.
No, I've heard about these fancy Korean grapes that are expensive.
Well, yes, they're actually fancy Japanese grapes. Mm. And that's how much people have paid for them. They're a special variety of grapes called Ruby Roman grapes.
Ruby Roman.
This is from an NBC news story from the first auction of Ruby Romans in 2008. A new variety of premium grapes debuted in Japan on Monday, with a single bunch fetching as much as 100,000 yen or $910 US. A Japanese hotel manager paid that amount, or about 2,860 yen or $26 per grape.
Oh,
for a 1.5 pound or 700 gram bunch of Ruby Roman grapes to serve guests at an upscale hotel. We believe the price was probably a record high, said local agricultural official Hirofumu Isu. They're delicious, sweet but fresh at the same time, very well balanced. So what makes them so special? According to, I feel like my reference points are getting weirder. This is from a Japanese food box retailer called Sukarako.
Wait, food box.
Yeah, so you buy like a box of high-end foods from Japan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I used to get them, but the snack one, not high-end.
They seem like they know their stuff. So anyway, this is where this article is from. It explains the Ruby Romans. Ruby Roman grapes must have a deep red color, with each grape weighing at least 20 grams. Also, each grape must be at least 30 millimetres in diameter and have over 18% of sugar content. So they're basically
20 grams is big.
Yeah, they're slightly smaller than a golf ball.
Yeah,
that's
right.
How big these things are. Japanese Ruby Roman grapes are exclusively grown in the Ishikawa Prefecture, and harvesting season starts in July. The tree grows in greenhouses where farmers can closely monitor the condition of the fruits. Ishikawa is the only place in the world that grows this luxurious fruit. And what does it taste like? The taste is a combination of fragrant and elegantly sweet with a minimal sour taste.
So it costs $24 a grape. How much did it cost to import them then so I can try one?
they're not in that bag. Although, let's get onto that because they might be getting a little bit cheaper. They're delicious. They're the size of golf balls. They take an enormous amount of manpower, 14 years of intellectual property developing these grapes, and they only come from a single prefecture in Japan. So they're scarce, which makes them the perfect target for international intellectual property theft.
Ooh.
This is from JapanForward.com in late 2022. Grapes sold under the name Ruby Roman were found in South Korea. And when DNA testing was carried out on some of the locally purchased grapes, it was revealed that their genotypes matched those grown in Ishikawa Prefecture. It is believed that the fruit made their way to Korea as seedlings. So seedlings were stolen from Japan, taken to Korea and grown there. Because the process of grafting seedlings to harvesting of grapevines takes several years, it was done before there were any laws banning taking the seedlings. So that was like a legal grey area. Cultivation is thought to be possible simply by grafting a single branch of the smuggled vine.
Yeah, right.
The bigger problem is the name Ruby Roman has already been trademarked and registered in South Korea by these people who have taken the seedlings from Japan, because the Ishikawa Prefecture had assumed the grapes would only be sold domestically and didn't register the trademark. So they've stolen 14 years of development, millions of dollars of value, and nobody thought to register the trademark.
Yeah,
so now they're trying to, the Japanese, the Ishikawa Prefecture Agricultural Society are trying to register the trademark in Singapore and Hong Kong and China, just to make sure that the market that they'll be selling it to will at least have some protection for them.
Smart. Because it's like lucrative because in like Japan and Korea, there's like this huge gifting culture for expensive fruits.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what this would be about.
That's right.
Like you can get fancy, incredible berries.
Yeah,
like
berries and melons. And it's super expensive. So the watch out for our listeners. If any South Korean grape retailers try to sell you some ruby Romans out the back of a car in the Northland car park, you come to us.
Ben, what's Australia's best cooking show?
The Cook and the Chef.
Exactly. No question. We've both watched a lot of Maggie and Simon over the years.
We have.
We've actually had a year-long campaign that our listeners wouldn't know about, trying to get Maggie Beer on the show. It looked like it was going to happen.
Yeah, there was dates locked in.
Too early.
Yeah. She's a busy woman.
She is a busy woman. We live in hope. Maggie, come to us.
I named my child after her. Anyway.
I like to say that you're more Simon and I'm more Maggie.
Because of my raver days and
But, I mean, we both want to be Maggie because Maggie Beer is the best person in the whole world.
That's true.
And what, my friend, is Maggie Beer's number one favourite ingredient that she'll work into anything?
Verjuice.
Verjuice. She puts it in roast chooks. She puts it in Christmas hams. She puts it in oysters, cakes, soups, pasta, ice cream, cocktails. Literally everything Maggie Beer touches has a little glug of verjuice in it. Or a big glug.
Maggie Beer brand verjuice, by the way.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. So what actually is verjuice? I've said multiple times in my life and never looked it up. But it's the grape episode.
You looked it up.
I looked it up.
Oh, my God.
It's the juice of unripe grapes.
Ah.
And you can use it as an acid in cooking. I mean, I did know that.
How is that different to vinegar?
Vinegar has lots of complex stuff going on. I remember trying to work that out for our vinegar episode, and I'm like, oh, too hard to mention.
Okay, don't understand
the science. Verjuice you can make yourself just by, like, squashing unripe grapes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's all it is.
And you can use it as, like, the acid in cooking instead of lemon juice. It's, like, a bit... It like adds brightness or sharpness, except it's milder than lemon juice. Maggie Beer actually says verjuice is the most gentle of options, lifting flavours without dominating.
Mm. That sounds like Maggie, doesn't it?
Oh, totally. It's the most calming thing I've ever said. Very Maggie. That's from an article in the Sydney Morning Herald 11 years ago by Kirsten Lawson. And I've actually got some verjuice here.
Oh, my God.
Let's taste it.
Okay.
I've got some wine glasses. We don't have to drink a whole glass. But this reminds me of when I visited Maggie Beer's farm in the Barossa Valley. She has this verjuice on tap. She's given it out for free and it's glorious.
Okay.
Ooh, it's good. I would just drink that.
It is good. It's kind of halfway between vinegar and like grape juice.
It also kind of just tastes like non-alcoholic wine.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think I've paid $10 for a bottle of this from the supermarket before.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So, why does Maggie love verjuice, but it's rarely mentioned
by anyone else? Yeah.
Well.
Explain it to us.
According to the Maggie Beer website, Maggie was the first person in the world to produce verjuice commercially.
Oh. So she invented verjuice.
Well, I mean, no. Back to the Age article. It says, Beer pioneered the commercialization of verjuice here and around the world. She believes she was the first to make commercial quantities anywhere, an extraordinary possibility, given the long history of its use in Europe and the Middle East. So people have been making verjuice for years and years, centuries and centuries.
Yeah.
Could look up the dates, but that's more your
probably
thing.
Thousands of years.
Yeah, probably thousands. So, but Maggie started making it in 1984, and she says she was the first to make it commercially.
Okay.
We can ask her when she comes on our show.
Yeah, let's do it.
And she learned about it through reading Elizabeth David and French cookbooks when she was searching for recipe ideas for her new farm shop after moving to the Barossa and setting up the shop and a vineyard in the 1970s. Quote, I felt a sense of affinity with it, almost as if I could taste it as I read, she writes. Given my preference for sour flavours, I just knew it was going to be something I would love. So when she found herself with a crop of Rhine Riesling grapes that she couldn't sell, she persuaded a winemaker friend to help her turn them into verjuice.
Mm.
She's a smart woman, that Maggie.
She's everything.
Do you have verjuice in your fridge, Ben?
I don't. Mm. But I think I will now.
Well, I have two bottles, so I guess that settles it that I'm the Maggie out of this pairing.
Oh, God. I knew it. Okay, grapes make verjuice.
Yes.
We've just learned that. Grapes also make wine.
Correct,
yep. And wine has booze in it most of the time.
Yes.
Which isn't a problem and, in fact, is quite a good thing unless alcohol is illegal. Yes, listeners, we're going back to the US alcohol prohibition of the 1920s. Oh, it's my new Civil War. I really feel like this is my new... We're going back there. This is from an article from wine publication Vine Pair. I won't go into too much detail, but alcohol was prohibited by the US federal government in the 1920s. But people still wanted to drink. And that's where a whole bunch of bootlegging happened. And, you know, you can watch the movie Untouchables with Sean Connery. I don't know. It's a thing. Kevin Costner. That's where I got all my history from. But there was also some very... enterprising wine growers from the Napa Valley in California who did pretty well out of prohibition, and this is how they did it. This is from an article from wine publication Vine Pair. The Volstead Act, which is the law that made prohibition happen, stipulated that grape growers themselves could make juice and juice concentrate only if those products were used for non-alcoholic consumption. So wine growers could still grow grapes, but they couldn't sell the booze. So the vineyards could still make non-alcoholic wine. And that wine could theoretically be turned into alcohol by consumers as long as the winemakers gave a clear warning that this was illegal. And they had no knowledge of the end consumer's intentions. With these loopholes in place, the creation of wine bricks and, in turn, the ability for US citizens to continue consuming wine came to be.
So you buy the non-alcoholic wine and then you make some kind of wine brick.
No, you buy it as a brick. So this is back to the article. A wine brick was a brick of concentrated grape juice.
Okay. So like a literal brick.
Literal brick, like boiled down to like solid form.
Mm.
Which was
And you just lick it.
No, you would add water. So yeah, so this was completely legal to produce. The consumers would then dissolve in water.
Yes.
And then ferment that grape juice.
So it's like Barocca.
I guess so. I guess it's like... stock cubes.
Yeah. I was going to say like a bath bomb.
Bath bomb, stock cubes. You're buying this big sort of thick, solid brick and you are dissolving it in water and all of a sudden you've got this grape juice made of Riesling grapes or Burgundy or Claret. Mm. So the consumers could then dissolve in water and ferment to make their own vino. But not every consumer knew how to make wine. So how did consumers know what to do? If you were to purchase one of these bricks, on the package would be a note explaining how to dissolve the concentrate in a gallon of water. That makes sense. That's how to use it legally. And then right below it, the note would continue with a warning, instructing you not to leave that jug in the cool cupboard for 21 days or it would turn into wine.
Definitely not 21.
That warning was, in fact, your key to vino. And thanks to loopholes in prohibition legislation, consuming 200 gallons of this homemade wine for your personal use was completely legal. So you're allowed to make it at home for yourself. It just couldn't leave your home. Something wine brick packages were also very careful to remind consumers. And they also pointed out the flavors of grapes, so Burgundy, Claret, Riesling. That's what might happen if you mistakenly left the juice to ferment. Warning, don't do that. So by 1924, the price per ton of these grapes was a shocking $375, a 3,847% increase in price from the pre-prohibition price tag of only $9.50.
People love their non-alcoholic wine.
Just definitely don't leave it for 21 days in a cupboard to ferment.
I won't.
Thank you.
Are you a gamer, Ben?
does Tetris count?
Tetris counts.
Then I was a gamer from 1995 to 1998, pretty solidly.
Yeah, right. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
So it hasn't really extended.
No, not really.
Oh, interesting. Because I've obviously talked about being like a Farmville nerd.
Oh, yeah, Farmville. Yeah, that's how you learn how to farm. Yep.
Yeah, but I've also like learned how to play golf. PGA Golf Tour was one of the first games I was into. You know, Super Mario Brothers, Rayman, The Sims, Grand Theft Auto, Pokemon, Ice Sketch, Solitaire Showdown, Draw Something, Candy Crush. But somewhere in the late 90s was a little sponsored game made to get kids to eat more lollies. And I was obsessed with it. And it was made by the Willy Wonka Candy Company. And it was called, I think it was just called Nerds Rope.
Oh.
But do you know Nerds?
I know the lollies. Yeah. God, yeah.
Well, I have some here. They're like the little box of... you usually get grape and strawberry, the pink and purple.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't had one in about
26,000
years.
No, neither have I.
But they're kind of, I think they're sour. Mm.
Yeah, kind
sour
of
sour and fizzy sour, sugar.
Sherbety.
Yeah. Yep.
Grapey, I guess.
Yes. They're actually quite disgusting. I've never really liked Ned.
I went through a phase of enjoying them, but no, not something.
They're not great.
Yeah, it's not rekindling my love of Nerds, I wouldn't say.
Well, it didn't really matter because the game was an entity to itself.
Sure, sure. Mm.
But the game was to promote a version of Nerds called Nerds Rope. So I found a video of what the game looked like on YouTube. So it's called Nerds Rope. And the instructions are, we nerds just love to play follow the leader. Want to play with us? Use the arrow keys to turn us up, down, left or right. You can't hit any walls or obstacles or you'll lose a turn. You also can't hit any other nerds on our rope line. So it's basically Snake.
Yep.
But it's Nerds. Like the game you used to play on your Nokia 3310.
Yep.
3315 if you're me and you're just a bit cooler. But the snake was made of a nerd's rope and a different nerd got added every time you got a little packet of nerds. So watching the video, I could feel the sound effects in my bones.
Mm.
And the stress of this friggin' nerds rope getting longer and longer. But like, it just made me think, how good is it being a kid when like that's your number one thing that stresses you out, like nerds rope or snake or,
yeah.
I mean, in your case, like getting like a funny shaped block when it's falling down and it's near the door.
Yeah.
So what other lollies had games attached? Mm. Well, the Willy Wonka Candy Company also made a Laffy Taffy game, which is like an American lolly, called, Ben, you'd like this, Laffy Taffy-tress, which is basically Tetris.
Tetris, but with
Laffy Taffy
sponsored
lollies.
Content,
yeah.
Making me want to buy their product.
Yes. And a website called Candy Stand had a Lifesavers game. Made in 1997. I never dabbled in that one, but it looks pretty shit, which means I probably would have liked it.
Mm.
Can't find too many other examples. But after having dedicated a large portion of my life to this Nerds Rope game, I can safely say I barely know what a Nerds Rope is and I've never eaten one. So 22 years later, the advertising has finally worked because I've got a Nerds Rope and we can eat it.
Is that? Oh, wow. So a Nerds Rope is a thing. Okay.
You can buy it from Woolworths.
Whoa.
I've never seen it.
Well, they really played the long game. Okay.
Look at this.
It's a rope of
it's
nerds.
It's magical.
Attached
this
to some sort of...
beautiful thing I've ever seen.
So it's
nerds
got like a
go
sort
everywhere.
Of snake down the middle and then covered in...
Yeah, it's like a lolly. A long lolly covered in colourful nerds. Oh,
you know what? That's kind of amazing.
Mm.
That's really good.
A lot better than dealing with microscopic nerds everywhere.
Yeah.
I still am. I mean, I've covered this booth with nerds, but
yep.
You're welcome.
What I'm worried about, and I'm glad that you redeemed it at the end there by buying a nerds rope, is if this game was essentially like early 2000s sponsored content and it didn't work on you for 20 years... Does that mean our listeners aren't all going to tire power? How
I'm
are we
sure
gonna...
they're buying tissues, just the other ad that we seem to get.
Guys, download something from Audible. Come on. Come on. Emily. Do you know anything about something called emoji?
No, nothing.
Well, they're pictographs used to create a universal language. And interestingly, they're actually tiny pieces of code invented by an employee of a Japanese pager company.
Yep.
Okay, you're across them. We talked about them. You're aware that from time to time, some emoji pick up unintended meanings, like the eggplant or the peach or the water droplets, for example. But do you know what else can have a filthy, filthy meaning?
Not grapes.
Grapes.
Really?
The grape emoji, which I'll describe it for the listeners, a bunch of purplish red grapes, usually five or six, a little bunch, very round. In fact, they look like Ruby Romans. Perfectly round
and they grapes. They weren't in the first drop because I don't remember being able to use them in my emoji food review blog days.
There you go. So added a little bit later.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it took a little bit longer for them to get an X-rated meaning. Honestly, I can only find like two places on the internet that say that it is dirty, but one of them is this Daily Mail story, so you know it's good, titled "The X-rated meanings behind popular emojis that will make you think twice before sending your next text." Mm-hmm. So the grapes and the clinking beer glasses can both be used to mean a man's testicles.
Okay. Okay.
There's a bit of WTF going on there. Like, explain to me how clinking beer glasses or like a bunch of five or six grapes can denote testicles.
Yeah.
But I guess they're hanging... They're roundish. I don't have
six
of them.
Five or six throws me.
Yeah. Yeah. So just, I'm glad that you're aware now. But the only thing, not only that, that's not all. Not only are grapes sexy emoji grapes, they're also used by the drug trade. Also, according to the Daily Mail in the article, "From the red and yellow pill to a broccoli leaf and a PowerPoint, the hidden drug meanings behind some of our most commonly sent emojis." Mm. This is an article from 2021. It's basically a rundown of a Kyle and Jackie O segment.
Okay.
So I'll go through the list.
So am I Jackie O and you're Kyle.
God. Hey, you get to be Maggie Beer. Can I be Jackie O? I don't really want to be either. I'll give you a rundown of the emojis that are used by drug dealers. Mm-hmm. The green, any green emoji, such as a leaf, a Christmas tree, or broccoli, marijuana.
Okay.
A diamond or eight ball, methamphetamines or ice.
You know children listen to this.
Well, you can have a chat to your parents about what illicit drugs are. The face with the mouth drooling, ecstasy. Uh-huh. Man skiing or a snowflake, you can sort of guess what that is.
Have you run these by a drug dealer? Or is this like when websites report on like youth, like, what are they? Like acronyms.
Yeah. Yes. It is totally unproven. But published in the Daily Mail from a segment on Kyle and Jackie O. How can it go wrong? But I want you to know, don't be sending the red grapes emoji because you might get some cough syrup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's like, you can get that at the chemist, can't you?
Yeah, I guess it's like, it's limited. Like if it's got pseudoephedrine like or whatever in it.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So so the that kind of cough syrup that can get you feeling a little bit red grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So now you know. I just taught you something about emojis.
Mm, your drug dealer may also deliver testicles, so.
Okay, so what did we talk about?
Talked about why it's okay to steal grapes. Then we tried a little bit of verjuice. And then I delved into my gaming past with the Nerds Rope game.
And I told you about Ruby Roman grapes, about Prohibition wine bricks, and then what the emoji grapes can mean.
So you can vote for who you found the most interesting on our Instagram. It's nice to be back for the year.
Happy 2024.
Yes.
Maybe your New Year's resolution can be to vote for me one time.
Mm.
Just once. That's all
maybe,
I ask.
I mean, maybe. It doesn't have to be this episode.
No, I guess not.